This is City Lights. I'm Lois Reitzes. On September 8th, 1966, the first episode of Star Trek aired on NBC. While this original series ran for three seasons, it has flourished with spin-off TV series and 13 feature films. The Star Trek music universe is no less impressive, with some of Hollywood's most noted composers bringing us 50 years of brilliant music for this highly successful franchise. Our film music contributor, WABE's Scott Stewart, is in the studio again to go where no one has gone before, or at least a lot of people haven't. Scott, welcome back.
Thanks, Lois. It is a pretty remarkable milestone, right? The 50th anniversary of Star Trek. So for those of us that were born in the Gen X period, we've always had Star Trek around. Millions of us have grown up with this series, and we just had the release this past summer of the 13th film. This is Star Trek Beyond, the part of the reboot series. And coming this January 2017, CBS All Access will release Star Trek Discovery, new television series. And this is the first one that they've had since Star Trek Enterprise shut down back in 2005.
Scott, I know from looking at your ears how much of a big fan of so much of the music from the Star Trek movies and televisions. The television shows are for you. I know how much you adore this music. What is it that makes it so special, and why do you look like Spock?
It's my little pointy ears. I think it is a really exciting set of music, and it's hours and hours and hours of recordings. And I was thinking about this. You know, we usually divide up film music history into these big picture chunks. First is that silent film era when there really was not any music in the film. It was just usually a pianist or a little theater orchestra or band. And then sound came in the late 1920s, and then we had that period that we call the golden age of Hollywood, that early sound, 1930s, really through World War II, when we hear that sound that we recognize by Eric Korngold and Max Steiner and Alfred Newman.
Lush, romantic.
And really, you know, the ancestors of whom were the romantics, right, from Germany and Austria. After World War II and going into maybe the early 70s, the symphonic scene never really disappeared, but it kind of took a backseat to jazz and pop music because filmmakers found they could make a lot of money with the youth market. But finally, when we started seeing movies like Close Encounters, Jaws, Star Wars in the mid-70s, there was a pretty massive return to this symphonic orchestral sound for contemporary music. And we also had the addition, of course, of electronics and computer overlay. So Star Trek has been a part of this timeline from way before Star Wars in 77 through today. And I think it's always been associated with high quality music, large, serious, sweeping romantic style orchestra. I think in many ways it's helped preserve that symphonic tradition in film music, even while a lot of other sci-fi movies have turned to more special effects and computer sounds.
The original Star Trek theme is a ubiquitous part of popular culture. Maybe you could even consider it a folk song of sorts. Even non-Trekkies recognize the signature horn call and know the familiar tune by Alexander Courage.
Thank you.
thing that I do notice about the Star Trek opening fanfare is that instead of using triads the way that Mozart might, so if Mozart had written it, he might have gone 1-3-5-3-1. But Alexander Courage, the composer of this original tune, uses what's called a quartal, and that's something that Paul Hindemith might have used. And so there's 1-4-1-4, so 2/4 instead of 2/3. And I think this almost seems metaphorical for reaching out, expanding, exploring, maybe going melodically where people haven't really gone before.
Boldly.
Yes. And Alexander Courage actually speaks about the origin of the Star Trek theme.
Let's hear.
Bill Hatch was the head of the music at Desilu. And Star Trek was a Desilu production. So he said, how would you like to write a theme for this thing? And we'll see, if Roddenberry likes it. When I was a little kid and I used to listen to the radio, there was a song by Richard Whiting called Beyond the Blue Horizon. And it had a long tune. And underneath this tune, they used to have usually an accordion player or something like that. You're going ticka 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 ticka, you see, about triple time. You see, so on, with this long tune and all of this diggity underneath it, the train. I thought, I should have a long thing that goes out into space, and it keeps going out into space, and everything's going to be long, long, long. And it goes, lyrically, as it were, without lyrics. over a fast-moving accompaniment.
And the fast-moving accompaniment has kind of a Latin sound.
It does.
He talked about Desilu, I wondered if that was a little bone
he was throwing to
Babalu.
Yeah.
But one of your current favorite, Scott, Michael Giacchino, mm-hmm. has paid homage to Alexander Courage and the iconic original mm-hmm. Star Trek theme in his reboot soundtrack.
He did. This was such a delight at the end of when I saw the Star Trek reboot number one back in 2009, the end credits came up, and it was actually the Alexander Courage main theme. And you'll find that end credits for Into Darkness and the recent Star Trek Beyond all feature that original theme. So it's a little souped up modern day version, but it's a really nice tip of the hat to the original theme.
So, Scott, with all of the tributes during the past week, of which we pay tribute now. It's just mind-boggling when we're reminded that the original Star Trek series ran for only three seasons, from 1966 through 69, and NBC canceled it after 79 episodes. Paramount bought the series from Desilu immediately and began reruns. The Star Trek cult following was growing, but it would be another decade or so before the first motion picture hit.
It was. And in fact, I remember reading that there was actually a letter writing campaign, if you can imagine this working today, to get that third season on the air, and it worked. But the network was not convinced that this was going to be a big moneymaker. So it did go into reruns right away. And you're right about that cult following. The first Star Trek convention was held back in 1972 in New York City, and Paramount tried to revive the series with cartoons, which I've actually never seen. There were 22 animated features in the 1973-1974 season, but I think the scene wasn't quite ready to be set until the success of Star Wars and then Close Encounters and all of the big science fiction mm-hmm. hits of the mid-70s, and that's when we had production of the first of the Star Trek movies in 1979. Composer Jerry Goldsmith, who was a pretty big deal at this mm-hmm. time and was originally requested back in 1966 for the television series but not available, was brought in on this project to compose probably what most of us know is the most recognizable of the Star Trek
themes. And he also wrote Batman.
Correct.
We'll be right back.
This is such vivid music for Star Trek by Jerry Goldsmith, and it was preserved for the Star Trek The Next Generation television series on Fox, which ran from 1987 to 1994. Although the television music is a little too watered down for my taste, this is such great orchestration and has this kind of Star Trek march, but that nice Alexander Courage-like longing bridge theme in the French horns, which I think is perfect for space exploration.
Yeah, and it has. You know, it invokes all that heroic music of Eric Korngold in the 1930s. I'm, you know, thinking Robin Hood or even Miklos Rozsa with Ben-Hur, King of Kings.
All that big brass and the percussion,
yeah.
For sure. One of the best tracks, I think, on the Star Trek The Motion Picture album from 1979 is Ilia's theme. You may remember her as the love interest. She had no hair, which is how I remember her. And the tune itself seems somewhat anachronistic when you listen to it. But again, hearkening back to that 1930s lush, thick, orchestrated love themes that are laced with a little poignancy and a little bit of regret. I think the simplicity of the piano and the mallet percussion accompaniment underneath the cello line makes this even more heart-wrenching. And you can note the use of the mostly traditional orchestra in what was a significantly high-tech sci-fi movie with a $45 million budget, mostly into special effects.
Well, hats off to them for that. Jerry Goldsmith scored 5 of the Star Trek movies. He was one of the masters of orchestration or instrument choice in his soundtracks for Planet of the Apes, The Omen, and Patton. And while the traditional symphonic palette is his default, he does make use of electronics.
That's right. And I think Jerry Goldsmith was so good at finding a voice for each movie that he scored. Excuse me. He used synthesizers to the point that he needed to, but not just because they were synthesizers, and made very creative effects in all of his music. The opening Klingon battle scene from Star Trek The Motion Picture is this interesting mashup of orchestra and synths and some other interesting effects, including the old blaster beam.
Oh.
This is that big 18-foot steel beam that's suspended in a warehouse, and it has these electric guitar pickups on it, and you strike it, it makes this really sinister, evil sound. Listen for it in this cue, the Klingon battle. There's that old blaster beam. This is such great action music.
Beam is an important part of the vocabulary
with
Star Trek.
This is some of my favorite action music by Jerry Goldsmith. It's so rhythmic, and you just have this sense of forward leaning. And we hear that now familiar Klingon leitmotif, that dee-da, 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 those little horn fifths. But it has this kind of primitive, ancient sound that again, maybe as a salute to Roja, who did all of those biblical epics. And I think that blaster beam also adds that little sci-fi touch in there as well.
You know, while you say, with your saying that, the reminder about the biblical epics and a little earlier invoking El Cid, Ben-Hur, King of Kings, these were all morality
Correct.
Tales.
Correct. These are all good versus evil battles that tell stories that have common themes. And that's
exactly.
really how Star Trek started.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's got Star Trek the motion picture had mixed reviews at the box office, but it did do well enough to spawn a sequel. But the budget was reduced to a mere $11 million, you know, Hollywood lunch money. And some of the hits took place in the music department. Jerry Goldsmith became unaffordable. Mm-hmm. So the director, Nicholas Meyer, turned his sights, yes, to an unknown composer and recent college graduate by the name of James Horner.
Which was a good gamble for him. We now know,
yes.
of course, that James Horner would go down in history as one of the most accomplished film composers in history. But in 1981, he was completely off the radar, had written music for some really trashy, low-budget films. But one of them was called Battle Beyond the Stars, and I think this is a hideous film. But it caught the director's attention, and Horner was contracted for the sequel, Star Trek The Wrath of Khan. And you remember Khan was played by Mr. Rourke, Ricardo Montalban. And this, in my opinion, and I don't want to start some sort of radio mud wrestling match, but this is, I think, the best of the Star Trek movies. And I think this is the best of the Star Trek movie soundtracks. Music
Ooh.
Of James Horner.
Listen.
Music of James Horner from Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan. Uplifting music, virtuosic, super kaleidoscopic in its changing orchestral color. And that you can tell that the tone of the sound world from the second movie is increasingly edgy and reflective of these ideas of revenge and surprise attacks and even some character development. In a way, I think it moves the genre forward, but at the same time, it's a tale of adventures, kind of like a high seas adventure. Lots of leitmotifs or character themes for the Enterprise, for Captain Kirk, Mr. Spock, and of course the evil villain Khan. And Lois, that only gets us into two of the 13 movies.
Oh my goodness.
So lots more to talk about, but I think the depth and the breadth of the Star Trek music universe is such a rich addition to film music history, and it's music that supports all of the interesting plots of the different Star Trek stories, but also gives us a portrait of the whole Star Trek universe in all of its beauty and all of its ugliness. So for those of us who have grown up with the crew of the Enterprise, it is a very happy 50th musical anniversary indeed.
And you should excuse a mixed metaphor, but may the Schwartz be with you.
Thank you.
Dr. Scott Stewart is WABE film music commentator and host of Strike Up the Band, which you can hear tonight at 9 o'clock. He's also on the music faculty at the Westminster School's conductor of the Atlanta Youth Wind Symphony and an inspiration to everyone. Thank you.
Thanks, Lois.